Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It is us. It is Bill and Wendy. It's Friday. It's the best day ever invented. We're thrilled that you're listening. Reach us by calling us or texting us at 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy.
Bill, I was thinking a lot about you yesterday as we wrapped up our stream show. Stephanie Menendez came in and just no softness about it. No lead up, just kind of like Don Rickles has died.
Yeah.
I wish you would have been eased into it a little better because I know how much he meant to you and how much he inspired you.
I was then and I am now on the verge of tears.
Ugh.
Without a doubt. I only met him one time. We will tell you that story at 10:30 because the other guys who got to meet him along with me will be in studio. Rich Coes, who plays Fenguli, Dave Plyer, who plays Dave Plyer, and three other guys. Six of us went up to Milwaukee to see him just a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it was amazing. But, yeah, the news of his death, even at the age of 90, where you can't really call it a surprise, was a shock, a very hard shock for me yesterday.
I cannot find who I wanted to credit whoever tweeted this. It might just be just some Twitterer out there, but they said, what a way to go, 90 years old and still have dates booked for your show.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's right. Not like, you know, he suffered very long, although he was in not the greatest of health in the last couple years.
In recent years, he's had some health issues and it had slowed him down quite a bit, but still working at the age of 90, still very, very funny at the age of 90.
Aren't you glad you went to see him?
Oh,
not, wouldn't you be kicking yourself right now?
Yeah. Yeah. On my bucket list of things to do and people to see, he was way, way, way up at the top of the list, and he did not disappoint both on stage and off. we'll tell the story later when the guys are here, but a couple of times in my life I've had an experience where I have seen people get younger before my eyes. One of them was with you, with Jack Brickhouse, years and years ago when we interviewed him, when he came up and we were told he had written a book, co-authored a book about his life, and we were told about Jack Brickhouse. Mr. Brickhouse is getting a little slow, so be patient with the answers. And
sharp as a tack.
He started out slow, but as that day went on, that interview with him, he got younger and younger. And Don Rickles was the same way. Backstage, he started out being a man of 88 years old, but once he realized he was in the presence of six people who didn't just know his work but adored him, he just got younger and younger and younger.
I find it, you know, growing up and watching him on The Tonight Show and in various specials that he'd be on. He was a decent actor, too.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He really was.
Just watching him, he was so funny. And I know you'd think, God, he's so mean. But it's okay if it's hysterically funny. And he was so, so funny.
Yeah, much of what he said was offensive. The majority of what he said was offensive.
Percentage-wise, what would you say?
80%, 90%.
Right, maybe 90.
80 to 90 easily. But because you could see it was being done with a wink, and you know what's very controversial about him, as far as I'm concerned anyway, is that when you saw him live, and I knew this long before I got to see him in Milwaukee a few years ago, the last 2 to 3 minutes of the show were a disclaimer. He would explain to the audience that even though we just spent 45 minutes making fun of Jewish people and Italian people and Hispanic people and Asian people, deep down, we're all one, we're all the same, and we need to get along, we need to get together and be friends and be brothers. And sometimes I'd say to myself, I almost wish he didn't do that because it was like pulling the curtain away and showing the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. But other times I went, no, I think maybe he has to do that. Maybe just to make himself sleep at night, you know?
Because he was mean.
Yeah, mean, but at the same time, it's hard to say mean and not mean at the very same time.
I know what you're saying. It was biting. It was funny.
Yeah.
A lot of it was based on facts.
Yeah.
But it was just... He was like the original shock comic.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Keep in mind, he started doing this in the very early 1960s. And
so how
was,
old was he, ballpark?
When he started? Well,
he was older, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, late 30s, I guess, right?
Oh, I thought even older. Because he looked the same as I saw pictures of him now as when I saw him on The Tonight Show. Because he looked old then.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't change much.
Not really. And, you know, he wasn't your prototypical comic, not just in form, because he did insult comedy when other guys were doing set up punchline. And he was pitbulling his way through an act where he was just, you know, venomous. But he wasn't TV pretty, you know.
Not at all.
You know, but boy, was he funny. And like I said with Steve Cochran, over the years when I did stand up, invariably at some point during the week when you're talking to the other comics, the conversation comes up over who do you admire. And Don Rickles' name always, always, always came up. And I never heard a single guy say, yeah, I don't get Rickles. I don't understand how he's popular. Everybody loved him. And the ones who got to meet him or work with him would be even, you know, more generous about their thoughts about him. They would just go on and on about how he went out of his way to make everybody feel good and important. And boy, is that amazing. Because you think, if you watch his show, you go, I bet that guy's miserable. Look at how miserable that guy must be. But no, he wasn't miserable at all. There's a documentary about him called Mr. Warmth that his son Larry made. And his son Larry died a couple years ago, too. It's a very sad story. He's a young guy. He's 41 years old when
he died.
It had something to do with complications from pneumonia. It had something to do with his heart because of pneumonia. I don't remember all the specifics. But like I said, he was 41, very young.
What's the name of that documentary?
Mr. Warmth.
Thank you.
And in it, they show Don... mostly on stage, but they also show him off stage about, you know, what goes on before, during, and after a show. And he really kind of lived for that time on stage. You know, the moments that preceded his show on stage were just him kind of just not really fumbling around, but just kind of not having much purpose until the lights were on him and the crowd was applauding.
And his pants were on him. What's with the no pants backstage?
I don't know.
I keep hearing in various places that...
He didn't always wear pants.
Until the last minute, because I guess he didn't want to get them wrinkled.
Right. That's it.
He'd have some pants valet come up and give me my pants.
Yes.
And then he'd walk out on stage.
I remember a scene in particular where he was talking to a stage manager, just little tidbits about baseball. You think the Dodgers are going to do it? I don't know. They don't have enough pitching. Yeah, but their hitting's better than just that little stuff. And you would think in that moment before the curtain opens, you might want to be thinking about the show.
Focusing.
No, he was thinking about pitching on the Dodgers. Do they have enough?
He was so funny. I mean, really, no one has a bad thing to say about him because you laughed throughout his whole act. There
That's
are
it.
Comics that you're like, okay, that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
This isn't so... I mean, through the whole show.
Yeah.
And the television specials, he would keep you laughing.
Always. Always, always.
We're going to take a break, and then some people want to talk about Don Rickles. 312-981-7200. 90 years, I guess... I don't know. Did people live longer than that? He was still performing at 90. It's not. He wasn't ready.
One of the tweets was, "We've lost Don Rickles at 90. That was not enough." And there's something to that. He could have kept going another 5 or 10 years easily. All right. So your thoughts were 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We are remembering very fondly, by the way, the life and career of Don Rickles. And in about 10 or 15 minutes. Some of the guys who I went on a pilgrimage to Milwaukee to see Don Rickles perform 2 years ago and then got to meet backstage will come and we'll all tell our stories about him.
I'm so glad you went.
I am so glad I went.
You really would be kicking yourself today.
Yeah.
All right. Things I've been hearing in the news, too, is how Don Rickles and Bob Newhart were such close friends,
yeah.
Which to me seems kind of like a crazy little mix. They seem like very different people, yet they have something in common, a great sense of humor. I will give you that. And Susie wants to talk about Don Rickles. Hi, Susie.
Hi. How are you? I love your show.
Thank you.
Back, I think it was early 80s, I went to Acapulco with my husband and another couple. I can't remember. We were, you know, going to one of the markets to shop for souvenirs. And we ran into Don Rickles, his wife, and Bob Newhart and his wife. And we were, oh, my God, hi. And, you know, and they gave us autographs and the whole thing. And then that night we went to a disco. And sure enough, they're at the disco and they're dancing and they're talking to us on the dance floor. And it was, like, hilarious. And they're wearing, you know, Mexican kind of shirts, and they're going crazy. And we ran into them another time, a third time. And we kept, like, everywhere we went. And they were buddies. And then Don Rickles said, well, I'm going to be at Goff Mill in Chicago in 2 weeks. Please come. So we went. We wore our Acapulco shirt. And we got a front row seat. You know, it's in the round, I think, Goff Mill at that time.
Yeah.
And we sat, if I recall, in the front, you know, in the front row, the four of us, wearing these Acapulco shirts. And he starts and he rips into us. Because on the trip, he wasn't Don Rickles.
Right.
He's just a great guy, nice, funny, you know, talking to us. But at that night, he ripped into us and started giving us insults and, you know, how we thought we were so funny. Look at those shirts. They're ridiculous. How could you go out in them? And on and on and on. And it was hilarious.
Susie, did that make you and your husband and your friends appreciate him more, that he could be such a warm, wonderful man, but then once he's on stage?
He was amazing. He wasn't acting in Acapulco. He was on vacation with his buddy and his buddies, you know, and the wives were very close friends, from what I recall.
They all were, all four of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were just really sweet and nice, and we saw them out of their element, I guess, because they weren't performing. And they were just having a good time. I don't remember what hotel that they were at, because I think we asked them and they asked us and all that. But yes, we were, and we knew him as Don Rickles, the comedian, with the I guess you took it as a compliment if he picked you out to insult you.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because
no doubt.
It was not really insulting. It was just, he was just ribbing you. And, you know, it just made it, we were hilariously roaring as everyone else. And I think he was like an equal opportunity insulter. He picked anybody, you know, somebody had crazy hair, or he would, you know, talk about somebody who was with their girlfriend and not their wife, and, you know, so on and so forth. But we had a great time. It was
Thank
wonderful.
You for sharing that awesome memory with us. Lucky for you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie.
I got to ask both of them about their friendship, because I said to Bob Newhart, it's an unlikely friendship. You don't seem compatible to Don Rickles.
They seem like the odd couple.
Don't they?
Yeah.
And he said that's what bound them together, was how different they were, but that they just loved to laugh. And when the four of them were together, Bob Newhart's wife's name is Ginny, and Don Rickles is Barbara. He said, when the four of us are together anywhere, it's a guaranteed night of laughter. When I asked Don Rickles the same question, he goes, oh, yeah, we go out. I got to nudge him every once in a while to make sure he hasn't passed away.
Oh, my God. let's take one more real quick. Mike, we have to take a break, but go ahead and get your thoughts out on Don Rickles.
The thing about Don Rickles is that his comedy was in the moment. If you didn't see him tell the line or say the line and tried to just tell it to some third or fourth party that hadn't seen it, it wasn't funny. You had to be there literally for his comedy, and you had to be in the moment, or it wasn't funny to just repeat it to somebody else. Secondly, I love you, Bill and Wendy, and I treasure hearing you every time I commute from Detroit to Chicago. God bless you.
You're so nice, Danny. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Mike. It's Mike.
Was that Mike?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I've decided to refer to him as Danny. It's easier.
He pays you the biggest compliment ever.
It's easier, right?
All right, Bobby.
Yeah. I just felt that it's time for a name change, Wendy. You can't go with the same name forever. It's ridiculous. All right, we're going to take a break. Steve's got the news for you, and then some guys who Don Rickles really meant as much to them as they do to us, and we'll share those stories with you. And keep listening, and if you have stories about them, we would love to hear them through 1-2-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. That, of course, the song that Don Rickles would come out to whenever he made an appearance, both on The Tonight Show or live in person. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We were saddened by the news yesterday as our show came to a conclusion at 1 o'clock, our internet show, the stream show, that Don Rickles, who meant a lot to us, had passed away.
And it was just blurted by Stephanie. She did not, like, get your... You know, Bill, there's something I need to tell you.
You know, Steve Bertrand told me an interesting story after the show that... They got news on the newswire that Don Rickles had died, and there was some discussion in the newsroom as to who would break the news to me, because he meant so much to me And Steve and Stephanie and everybody was going, what's the best way to tell him? And I guess the answer was for Stephanie to just come in and blurt the news. That was the best, most gentle way.
I got
I was fighting to do it because I wanted to see the look in your
eyes.
You're so mean. I had an AP alert, but after Stephanie barged in is when I got the alert because I would have liked to have told you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I thought of you all last night.
Well, thank you. It was a difficult day. We have assembled a panel of gentlemen in the studio to talk about Don Rickles, and the reason is we all got together a couple of years ago and went and saw him in Milwaukee. Dave Plyer is here, of course. Dave, a fixture here on WGN Radio.
Good morning.
Rich Coase is here. Rich plays Svengoolie and has for...
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
Oh, no. Yeah, I am spoiled.
He also plays Mary Queen of Scots. People know that about you, don't you?
I am not amused. No, that was somebody else.
And Jim Roach, who is a fine writer for Svengoolie's show. Jim, thank you for being here. Rich, Dave, we appreciate you being here. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of a wake.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We all hugged each other as you guys came. Amen.
To everybody, it's like your grandpa. Like this guy was legendary, right?
Yeah.
And meant so much to you. I heard your conversation with John Williams yesterday. I mean, it felt emotional when you found out.
You know what? Wendy knows this because she was part of this a couple years ago. I'm not the kind of guy who just randomly hugs people. There has to be a reason for me to hug people.
He's cold.
I have to really, really enjoy
it. So you have to take it personally.
To hug them. No. And I said to Wendy one time when we established that all of us were going to Milwaukee, I said, I will not be able to help myself when I see Don Rickles. I won't be able to hold back. I'm going to hug Don Rickles. And we talked about it on the air. We all joked around about how awkward will that be when and if I meet him to hug him and stuff. And when we went backstage after his show in Milwaukee, I told him that story. And I said, Mr. Rickles, I told him everything I just told you. And he's just nodding his head. And he's nodding his head. And I go, is that okay? Can I hug you? And he goes, you can hug me, but no tongues. back me up on this. As warm a man off stage as he was cold on stage, correct?
Definitely so. I was just very surprised because I didn't know what to expect. I had never met him off stage. And only seen him, you know, performing. And when we went back there, he was so nice, so kind, asked all our names, what we did, and seemed genuinely touched that all of us knew his career, because he considered us the young guys, and that our generation knew him and that we were asking specific questions about certain things in his career. And he was there with his wife, and they were both so nice and so kind. I just read something by Penn Jillette. He wrote a little memorial piece that was so nice. And one of the things that really impressed me was when he's talking about, you know, the way that Don would do his show, that nobody ever got upset because you could always see his heart. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he really was a kind, generous man, so nobody took any of the, quote, insults seriously.
Jim, I just said to Wendy that during the 35 or 40 minutes that we spent with him afterwards, he got younger as the time went on. He started out, it was the end of his show, and he was tired. It was his first time on stage in, I think, 6 or 8 months because of a surgery.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the more he realized that there were 6 guys there who worshipped him, he got younger and younger and younger. And his agents, his manager, said to us afterwards, this was very good for him.
Yeah.
This was very good for him.
Even Don said that just being around us, and Rich mentioned that we were asking him questions, he was asking us questions about what we did and all our roles in various things. And he seemed to get energy from that. And it was really fun.
And how sweet is that for someone like a Don Rickles to actually give a crap about you guys? You know, seriously, that shows what
One of the things we always remember, and you probably remember this very well, Bill, was as we were winding up, he knew all of us were in broadcasting. And here's a guy who had just played to a sold-out audience, was touring all the time, was about to appear on one of the late-night talk shows. And he says, you young guys, please make sure that you keep my name out there.
Always.
Like he needed us to do that?
Jimmy Kimmel mentioned that last night, too, that you keep your name out there. I think he was also surprised because we were all such big fans that we were asking him probably deeper questions than normally would ask about his movie roles or his early television days or Murray Franklin's, the clubs that he used to play at. I think he was really surprised that we knew and we gave a damn about it.
Oh,
And he thought you were all stalkers.
A little bit. Maybe a little.
All right, so the question keeps coming up. If Don Rickles started today in 2017, could that last? Could that sustain, or would audience go, I don't want to see a guy who's just making fun of ethnicities, and that's not going to play? What do you think?
I don't know that he could do the same act if he started today.
Because
we talked about that, you know, I remember Bill, you and I sitting there, and he delivered certain lines, and we'd be laughing hysterically, looking at each other and saying, can you believe he just said that?
Right.
But
right.
I don't know that, you know, with today's, you know, politically correct climate, if a guy just starting out and doing that would be able to succeed.
But even back then, there were people that were shocked by him.
Yeah.
If you ever watched the roast or some of these events that he was doing, you would look out into the audience and you would see people like with their hands over their mouth because they had no idea that that was going to come out of somebody's mouth in that day and age.
But they laughed either afterwards or while their hand was over their mouth.
That's true. A little shock factor.
One of the things I think that would be timeless and that he was the expert at was timing. I mean, he knew what to say and when to say it and who to say it to. And that would never get old. But, you know, in this day and age where everything is meant to shock and to turn your head around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a matter of being in the right place at the right time comedically. And there was nobody better at it than him.
Was there anyone who did his act? Wendy and I were trying to put a percentile on there and it's impossible. But 80 to 90% of it was him insulting the audience or whatever he felt like. Did anyone do that before him? I know every once in a while a comic would pull an insult or two out, but not an entire act.
The most famous guy who did it was Jackie Leonard, Jack.
Yeah.
But his was still not the same sort of thing as Don Rickles, because he still had like his real set-piece type things, and he was known for just – and he had more of a mean edge to him, actually.
Yeah.
But I read something that Don did not like the idea of people calling him an insult comic because he felt insult was too mean a term.
And what would have been his if he could choose the way he was described? What would have been
a poke fun comic?
A poke fun comic.
Poking very hard.
That was probably more it. But he didn't like the fact because he didn't feel like he was necessarily insulting people.
Oh.
He was just kind of very good with it, poking fun at him.
Yeah.
And he always wanted to make sure nobody took it seriously.
All right, Bill, you mentioned something before how at the tail end of his show he would say this is not meant to really offend anybody. Was that recently that he started doing it, or from day one he always did that?
I think he always did that. That was how he always wound it up. And even during the act, he'd always, you know, mention, "I kid, you know, I'm Jewish, you're Asian, you're black, and, you know, we should all be just getting together.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be arguing and fighting with each other."
Yeah.
And then he delivers something. Now go back and get a rake or something like that.
Yeah. I asked Bob Newhart about that. I said, when, because we had already established with Bob Newhart that they were best friends. And I said, have you ever wondered about that disclaimer at the end? And he goes, no, the thing I try to do is I try to get him to not sing during his act.
He's got
to that he needs to sing a song, and nobody wants to hear Don Rickles sing a song. Yeah. But he always did. He always did a song during his act.
One of the things that we always marveled at was when he did his little World War II thing or something.
Yankee
and then
Beetle.
Transitioned into talking about any current war situation and yelling at Jimmy Cagney to bring all the boys home safely.
Right.
That always kind of threw me a little bit.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. That act, if you buy his Hello Dummy album from 1968, it is the same act. I mean, I'm going to say 80% of it, right, is the same act. And then it's just kind of random based on who's in the audience and who he can pick on. But it was the same flow of the same act. And Carson used to give him crap about it on the show.
He used to
be like, are you going to do your act? Are you just doing your act here? You know, I mean, what is this?
I mentioned this with when I was on with John Williams yesterday, but I know you'll all attest to this. The behind-the-scenes magic of the show was they would have the people who sat the room when you would go to see him live. If you were an ethnicity that they knew Don would be interested in making fun of, Asian people and Italian people and Jewish people, they were all given seats right up front so he could just casually notice the differences in the audience.
Or if you were overweight, if you were wearing some bizarre loud clothing or whatever, they would arrange that because they knew, you know, he had the arsenal ready.
Yep.
And there was your entertainment right there.
When we went to see him a couple of years ago, I imagine you all noticed what I noticed. They ran a lot of clips throughout his career. So at the time, Mr. Rickles was 88 years old, and you got to see, you know, all the stuff he did in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And then it occurred to you at some point that pretty much everybody you were watching in the clips with Johnny Carson and Frank Sinatra and on, all those people had passed away.
God, are you a downer?
Yeah. Well,
no, it's totally true.
He even addressed it at some point that he's lost a lot of friends. And
is Frank gone?
Yeah, Frank is gone.
Can I ask something? I asked Bill off the air. Was it Frank Sinatra who put Don Rickles on the map, or Johnny Carson, or a combination of the two?
I think it was Frank Sinatra.
That's what I keep hearing.
Because you know the famous story. I'm sure, have you already told
it? It's the best, but tell it. Okay. It's the best.
Don Rickles is working a small club, and in comes Frank Sinatra with his entourage. And Don Rickles sees him and says to him, "Hi, Frank, make yourself at home. Punch somebody." And the thing was, everybody was like, "Oh, my God, he said that to Frank Sinatra." And suddenly, you know, Sinatra's on the floor laughing. And he thought, you know, here's this guy that's got, you know, the guts to do this. And he really enjoyed him, and he helped to get him rolling in the bigger venues.
Late night nightclubs is what he was playing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Long before Carson. And I think that's where the stars really got attached to this guy.
Sure. Did he open up for Sinatra a lot?
Later.
I think, later on. I don't think
the
early
70s, 80s.
The other famous story is he's in a restaurant with his wife, Barbara, and he wants to impress her. So when she gets up to go to the bathroom, he walks to to Frank Sinatra's table and says, "Mr. Sinatra, I'm here with my wife, Barbara. She's a huge fan. I'm a huge fan. If you could just come by the table and a quick hello, that's all I ask. I'll see what I can do." And then he goes back to his table, and Barbara comes and sits down. And when Frank is leaving the restaurant, he comes over to say hi. And he goes, "Hi, I just wanted in." And he goes, "Frank, please, we're eating. It's the best thing in the world."
You know, I was just thinking, as far as longevity, and I can't even pronounce
longevity.
It. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
It's amazing because he really has outlasted all the other entertainers from his era.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that he was still performing, like, you know, what, a week ago or so? And I'm trying to think, some of the other comics might still be around, but they're not performing anymore.
No.
And I can't imagine anybody matching that. Today,
Jerry Lewis is it. We were talking about, like, who's left from that era. That might be it.
Yeah, but he's not funny.
Shecky Green is still around, but he's not working anymore.
No.
There's a couple guys still alive, but not working anymore.
Yeah.
But
I don't think George Goebel's working anymore.
No, George Goebel's not working anymore.
He's buying black shoes.
His act died years ago.
We'll take a quick break, and then we will discuss a little further the life of the great Don Rickles, who we lost yesterday at the age of 90. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Well... Here I go, Ray. Thank you for coming. It's not going to be our usual show tonight because, and I'm going to tell you right in front, I'm going to cry. I'm already crying, which is embarrassing, but, well, I'm not good with this sort of thing. And I'm sorry, especially to those of you who came to see the show in person, but because it's probably not what you came for, but we lost someone that we and I love very much today. And again, I'm sorry for hearing this just now for the first time, but Don Rickles passed away this morning, and he was 90 years old. And I know it sounds crazy to say he was too young, but he was, because he was youthful and funny and sharp and generous. And I was fortunate enough to not only have Don on this show as my guest, but also to become close to him and his wife, Barbara, which was a lot of fun for me. I grew up in Las Vegas, so Don Rickles, even when I was a kid, was a very big deal. His name was on the marquee at the Sahara Hotel. You'd see him with Johnny Carson, making fun of Johnny, making fun of Frank Sinatra. And people always wanted to hear Don tell Sinatra stories, and he had great stories. But and I think this might be what brought us together, because I told Don, and this is honestly how I felt, like the Sinatra stories are great, but if Sinatra was here, I'd be asking him for stories about you. And Bob Newhart, Don's good friend, Bob Newhart, another national treasure, told me a great story about having dinner with Don and Sinatra that sums Don up pretty well, I think. Sinatra would sometimes get angry for whatever reason and flip out. So one night, they were all at a big table at a very fancy restaurant, and the restaurant was all white. Everything was white, the walls of the tablecloths, everything. And Don and Barbara, his wife, and Bob and his wife, Ginny, were at the table, and Frank was drinking, and he was not in a good mood. He was getting surly, which put everyone on edge. When Frank wasn't happy, you had to watch it. So they're drinking, and the food comes, and the waiter brings a bottle of ketchup and puts it on the table in front of Frank. And for whatever reason, this sends Frank into a rage. He doesn't want ketchup on the table, so he takes the bottle, and a very crowded, elegant restaurant, he throws it at the wall, and the bottle smashes, and there's ketchup everywhere, and everyone in the restaurant stops. There's like a gasp. And Don, without missing a beat, turns and says, Frank, will you pass the ketchup?
That is so funny. Every clip I hear of Don Rickles, I go, that is so funny. And then another one, that is so funny. He was really amazing.
You know, that's why yesterday, as we got the news, I was like right on the brink of tears. I was ready to just cry and cry and cry. And the whole way home, I just kept thinking about moments like that and stories. And all you could do is laugh. I mean, we miss him already, but
He was always around. I mean, 90 years.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around for, you know, in comedy for 6 decades. You just didn't think he was going to go away that quickly.
Let's go back to something we mentioned earlier, because I'm very curious to get your thoughts on this. He stressed with all of us, as he did with Jimmy Kimmel, because Jimmy Kimmel told the story yesterday, but we all experienced it firsthand, how much it meant to him to keep his name out there. He kept saying to us over and over, please say my name, tell people about me. I don't want people to forget. What do you think that's about? No one was ever going to forget him. So why do you think that meant so much to him?
Well, I think, again, at his advanced age, I think perhaps he was worried that the newer generations didn't really know about him and weren't familiar with his career. And if they were, they only knew him as, you know, the voice of Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah.
And not, you know, his, you know, amazing act that he did for years and years and his place in comedy.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that was part of it, that he wanted to make sure that people knew his comic persona and everything that he had done, as opposed to just, you know, doing the voiceover stuff.
Hmm. And Mr. Potato Head, obviously from the Toy Story movies, isn't that what gave him most of his money at this point?
He did all right with that.
But his touring, I mean, he was still doing, I don't know, a dozen shows a year. I don't know what he was making, but, you know, 100,000, a couple hundred thousand.
Well, like I said, and sold out shows.
Yeah.
What a nice tip to the older generation when his character, Mr. Potato Head, in the Toy Story movie, he looks at the other toys at some point and goes, what are you looking at, hockey puck? And it is a hockey puck. Yeah. Little kids don't get that, but if you're a certain age, you are certainly going to get that.
But we're telling the story because you're keeping his name out there, so now little kids will get
but
that.
But don't you think because he's sold and he's seen so many of his friends die, like they in Mr. Warmth, his that HBO special, he walked and looked at all these pictures on his walls in his room and said, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone. And maybe he's seen that some of these stars have faded over the years, and he just wanted to make sure he, you know, was remembered in some way, you know?
There was a moment where he and his wife were telling us about their daughter, Mindy, and his wife, Barbara, said, and Mindy now is doing stand-up comedy, and he turned to us, and he did that thing that vaudeville comics used to do, and I still don't understand it, where you put your hand on your stomach as if you have gas or something, and he goes, oh, you got to see her. She's great. Like, as if to say, don't waste your time. But with his wife there, he didn't want to offend anybody.
I wonder if he, if you talked to him where he wasn't, I think he was probably so proud of her. But, still to just come out and do the slams against his own daughter, that kills me.
Right.
Did he insult you? I don't remember.
He did insult me.
What did he say to you?
He insulted me, and you know, it was like catching a touchdown pass from Bart Starr to be insulted by him. I mentioned him because it was his first time on stage in half a year. He had had surgery and he hadn't done any show business stuff at all for at least 6 months, 8 months at the time. So I said, Mr. Rickles, it must be a thrill. It just must be a thrill to be back on stage and performing again. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm at a casino in Milwaukee in front of people who have no idea who I am. Couldn't be a bigger thrill in my life.
That's classic.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I just remember that the first time we all went in and met him, that we had waited quite a while. And then finally we were in there. And after we talked to him for a while, I remember him saying, gee, you know, if I'd known you guys were so nice, I would have had you come in earlier. That was so cool.
Right.
When we were in Vegas and interviewed him last year, Bennett Wakenight and I, and this was just ridiculous, but he was introducing people in the audience, and he said, from Chicago, Dave from WG, which was amazing. And he said, Dave, I'm glad you could be here because I know you got a busy schedule. And then he rolled his eyes and looked up. which is, that's all you wait
he
for.
He mastered
obviously.
That look, didn't he?
Yes,
that ridiculous
he did.
Look.
He did.
All right, so.
Thanks for sharing some of your thoughts and your little road trip. And who are the other two that were there that aren't here today?
Well, Jeff Hoover.
Kevin Picorni was there. I'm trying to think who else.
Is that the group?
I think that's it. That was, yeah, it was the six of us. But
that's the other thing that made me sad, thinking that all of us will not make one of those trips again.
Yeah, because
it was so much fun, and being with all you guys was always such a great, you know, thing to be able to experience.
The Pointer Sisters are going to be up there. Maybe we can go take a look up there and see them.
Dave, shut up.
Hey, guys, one thing I just want to remind everybody.
Yeah.
Keep his name out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what he wanted. So remember
Let's start
him
a hashtag.
Yeah.
Keep his name out there.
We need to. Nice. The great Don Rickles. Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciated. We really do love hearing these stories about the great Don Rickles. We'll take a quick
break. Are you going to mention our panel one more time?
If I have to.
Because people were just tuning
if
in.
If I have to. Dave Plyer, whose show is right here on WGN, and Rich Coase, who is, can I?
I'm Bill Curtis.
It's Bill Curtis. He plays the role of Bill Curtis on Svengoolie, and Jim Roach, a fine comedy writer on that
executive
program.
Executive producer. Yeah.
And executive producer as well.
Yep. I don't know how to write. I'm illiterate.
That's all right.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break, some news, and then a lot more show, including Jake Johnson from New Girl. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder in studio with us right now. Jake Johnson, who you know and love from The New Girl. He plays Nick. He has a new movie coming out. We will tell you all about that. And his friend, you know, this is very mysterious. We've never had a guest in here ever who has
other
insisted.
Other than Cher,
who has insisted we not use their last name. But, Nikki, that's your story. No last names.
Or,
that's right.
Well, guess what? In the movie, we introduce him. This is
his I get
first,
it now.
And his name in the credits is Nikki Excitement.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
I want to change my name to that.
To Wendy Excitement.
I like that.
Wendy Excitement and Nikki Excitement. Well, if you guys got married, you'd be Wendy and Nikki Excitement.
The Excitements. Yeah, the Excitements are here.
Our kids, Jerry and Sarah Excitement.
I'm going to leave this up to you, Jake. We can start out by talking about Win It All, or we can talk about the Cubs first. It's the ball's in your court, sir.
Then let's talk Cubs.
You want to talk the Cubs for just a little bit? I know what a huge fan you are.
I am, yeah.
Are you still, is your heart still beating at twice the normal speed?
Yeah, the last year was a crazy finish. And this year, the process has been wild because the adrenaline has gone down.
Yeah.
So even opening night, it was, you know, I was doing press in New York, and I fell asleep in the eighth inning.
Did you?
And that, in my past with the Cubs, would never have happened. But I'm like, it's going to be a long season.
Yeah.
These guys, unless something goes terrible, they're good enough to be in the playoffs. So if I need to go to sleep, I got an early morning. I'm sure you guys got it. Where I used to think my watching was part of it.
Sure, of course.
So I'm like, now that they've won, you guys don't need me. I can relax a little bit.
What goes on in our brains, though, what you just said is so true, where you do think that you play an integral role in whether the Cubs will win or not just by watching the games.
I know. I got to tell you, I have no idea, but it is so weird. You know, my dad and I watched a lot of Cubs games during, like, the 2003 era.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. Like, it seems like I'm making a joke when I talk about it. But if the Cubs were on a hot streak and he was standing and I was sitting, he didn't sit until the inning was over. And if he did, I would look at him like,
what's
going on with you, you idiot?
You're
going
to cost them a game.
What are you, trying to cost us a game? And Nikki and I talked about this because we're both diehard fans. We used to do a thing with the Cubs where how they were doing as a team somehow reflected how we were doing in our lives.
Really?
We're like, if they were in a really down streak, it would be like, how you doing, man? I'd be like, I don't know. I just can't figure it out. But if they came back and won, it'd be like, I can't figure it out, but I got a good feeling about the next couple of days.
Did you live most of your life, a lot of Cubs had this, where you think, I may go my whole life and never see these guys win the World Series ever?
It was so deeply ingrained. And here's the real truth. I didn't even question. I never thought we would. So I had accepted what it meant to be a fan of a team and want to win but not win.
Yeah.
Because I thought, as an organization, either it's the curse or it's just the Cubs. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to now get over a 100-year hurdle, I put myself in their shoes as I got older and in my industry. How do you break that?
Yeah.
The pressure of the city. Like, I'm so glad Game 7 was in Cleveland, because if that was in Chicago and he hit that two-run shot to tie it, I mean, the air, there would have been dead people.
Right.
People just, fans would have just died in their seats. You would have had to win Game 7 with a third of your crowd just laying on the ground because they had broken hearts.
It actually helped us having Cleveland have home field advantage, because it meant Kyle Schwarber got to be the 100%. DH in one extra game.
As well as it meant when they went in and Jason Hayward, any Cubs fan knows, I don't care what he did statistically last year, he's one of our heroes.
Yeah.
They didn't do that rain delay and he didn't talk to him, and they didn't come out to a stadium with a Cleveland fan base with no Chicago anxiety.
Yeah.
I don't see us getting that win in that moment. So it worked out perfectly.
Everything did.
Everything did. Yeah. In a way where I now just get to go, you know, it feels like a long-standing relationship where it gets to be over. That, like, weird part of my Cubs fandom.
Right.
I now get to just be a fan of the Chicago Cubs baseball team.
Yeah.
And if I miss a game, I'm sure they'll be fine.
Right.
White Sox won 11-2 yesterday.
Oh, congratulations. Who cares? Fan. Move on. Just move on. Who cares?
That's why I'm not participating. But, you know, everybody did. Non-Cubs fans say, oh, my God, if they win after all this time, the world's going to implode. What will Cubs fans do? I think you guys have handled it pretty well.
Yeah. You know, there was a thought about Cubs fans that I always hated. And it was, I started hearing about it from Red Sox fans where they were like, I gotta say, it was better when we lost. We had an identity.
Oh, no.
And it always made me sick. Yeah. There were certain people being like, do you want them to lose in the playoffs so they can be the Cubbies?
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, idiot, this is sports. That's like saying, I don't want to get paid a lot at my job because in my early 20s, I was broke.
Right.
No, right. You want to win at baseball. You want the team to celebrate.
You don't
want to
be lovable losers
no,
anymore.
No, being a lovable loser is terrible. You want to be a lovable winner. And
Amen.
If you're not lovable, it's fine. Just be a winner.
You know, right. The best thing is, for a lot of teams who win the World Series, they lose so many players when the year is over. And the Cubs lost a couple, but for the most part, they're poised to be contenders for the next 5 or 10 years.
I was really sad when Dexter Fowler left.
Sure.
I think his personality seems great. He just seems like a good human being. Until the moment Almora made that catch.
Over the
when
center field
caught
wall.
It, I honestly thought, like, see you later, Dexter. Thank you. Right. It was a great run. Right. But I never saw you make that catch.
Yeah.
And this kid's young. I was like, okay, like, thank you for the championship. Thank you for the Game 7 leadoff homer.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, we go. I get it. Well, now he goes, and we're still going to go.
Right. How about that?
So it's like, oh, go ahead.
We will discuss the movie, Win It All, in just a second. But first, I just received some devastating news for me. The chance that New Girl may be coming to an end, is it possible?
It might have been the series finale, is
yes.
that true?
So here's what it is, and I got to talk about, there was a little bit of fake news that happened for me. In that, so I don't know, because I'm just an actor in it, and the executives who run the network, they've told us they have not made a decision. So people are reading into my tweets or what I say in an interview, but if I say right now it's over or it's coming back, it means nothing.
Right,
I have no information. So as of now, we have not been picked up. And the season finale of season 6, for those who watch the show and follow it, the stories conclude.
Yeah.
So basically somebody asked me, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. I'd love to come back. But the stories have concluded. So it could end. Which then got published and ran with. Jake Johnson, New Girl's over, says Jake.
Oh,
I'm like, no. I never said it was over because I don't know.
Right.
So I hope it comes back. But season 6, Liz Merriweather, our creator, wrote that episode. And she wrote it in case we don't get picked up.
Yeah.
She said, I love this show. I love our fan base. And I don't want to leave them open-ended and then get canceled. She goes, so we're going to wrap it up. If we come back, we have ways to unwrap it.
Yeah.
Good for her, because I hate that not knowing.
Same with everybody. So if they do cancel us, season 6 did give you a finale.
Yeah.
But if there's a 7, you know, she is a smart enough writer and creator. And we have a great writing staff. They will unwrap it in a way. But as of now, you know, Fox just hasn't said.
It's some of the sharpest, quickest, fastest, best writing on TV, hands down. But then the ensemble, not just the 5 of you who are the leads, but every time they bring in an ancillary character, the casting is great.
It's crazy. Yeah. I feel like the way, and I realized it's season 1, it felt like one of those teams that, when they're making a playoff push, all of a sudden you're like, they got him?
Yeah.
That person's on the team?
Right.
Like, we would get like guys like Dermot Mulroney and all these like Justin Long popping and David Walton. I'm like, all these people are really talented. Lizzie Kaplan's doing this show?
Yeah.
Olivia Munn?
Yeah.
And it just, Megan Fox?
That wasn't a bad girlfriend to have for a season or two.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy as handsome as me, she's just so ugly and stupid and annoying. You know, I need somebody who's got better looks and more charm.
Yeah, but Megan,
I mean, the thing that really surprised me about Megan, and it sounds like an idiot to say it, but I didn't realize how funny she was.
She was very funny on the show. No
She's also
doubt.
Just really funny.
In real life?
Yes.
Yeah.
And like really nice and professional. And it seems like obvious things I'm saying. And I know I feel like an idiot being like, she was nice. But when you know of Megan Fox.
Right.
I expected her to show up with like 70 people flanking her. Yeah. She's going to be 16 hours late.
Yeah.
She's going to demand her stuff. And I'm going to be like, well, you know, we got Megan Fox, which was cool. She was the opposite. She felt like a utility infielder.
She was so good.
If they wanted her at third base, Megan played third. You wanted her? And she could just do everything, and she was nice. And then you have moments where you're like, and you're Megan Fox?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a bonus.
On top of it. We will discuss
Nikki,
the movie.
Nikki, you are exciting. I got to tell you that.
Just waiting to pounce.
We'll let him bounce after the break. Huh?
Nikki, excitement is here, and his friend Jake Johnson. We're going to tell you all about Win It All, the new Netflix film. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Two guests in studio with Wendy and me, Jake Johnson, who you know from New Girl, where he plays Nick, and Nikki Excitement, who really needs no introduction. They're both here to talk about the new Netflix film, Win It All. You have quite a stake in this film, don't you, Jake?
I do, yeah. This is the third movie I did with Joe Swanberg, and we wrote it, we produced it, we finance it. Every casting, there's no studio or executives, it's us. So
wow.
Nicky Excitement, we wrote it for Nick.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody else for it. Keegan-Michael Key, Joe Latruglio, these are the people that we kind of handpicked, and there's no model that they have international box office or blah, blah, blah. We wanted to make a movie that would go to Netflix so people could watch it at home. And you could watch it on your time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't want to pitch it to people and get their notes. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like it, then you don't like my taste.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nobody I can blame on this one. I love this movie. This is the movie I wanted to make. And if you hate it, you got to stop following me because you're never going to like the stuff that I do. Unless it's somebody else wrote it and I'm just an actor in it.
All right. Listen to you say you wrote something that you could see on Netflix so people could watch at home. Movies have changed, haven't they?
Well, you know, they have and they haven't. So I always believe in the theatrical release model. Mm-hmm. And I don't think what some people started saying about the Netflix model is that it's going to kill the other. And I think there's space for both.
Yeah.
And I say that because I've done a lot of these indies where I've gone city to city doing the tour and nobody went to the theaters.
Oh.
So I have been in theaters with the director and I, Joe Swanberg, when we did our other one, Drinking Buddies and Digging for Fire. And there's four people in the theater being like, whoa, we get to do a Q&A? And I'm like, how about we just get dinner?
Yeah.
Because if I'm on a stage and there's four of you, it's not a Q&A.
Right.
It's just a weird talk. So we kind of said, but then people find it, but all of a sudden like Drinking Buddies became a thing for people a year after we shot it.
Yeah.
So people are discovering these movies, but they're doing it on their own time. And so we said on this one, if that's how you're finding us, why don't we just make it in that way and say, watch it whenever you want.
Yeah. Just find us.
Just find it. If you want to watch it in 4 months, do it. Who cares?
The premise of Win It All is what?
It's a degenerate gambler who is kind of on the fringes of society and likes living in those fringes, and he gets an opportunity from somebody he grew up with to watch a bag. And the guy says, just don't watch the bag. I'm going to jail for about 6 months, and when I get out of jail, I'm going to give you 10 grand. So you're basically storage.
Yeah.
And he goes, fair enough. And then, like everybody, he's curious to see what's in the bag and finds out there's a lot of money. So as a gambler, he does what gamblers do, and he says, what if I took a little bit of it, something I could pay back in 6 months, say 500, gambled with it, took the winnings, and I could play with that and then put the 500 I originally took back and then play with house money. And if I could win big, I get to keep all the house money and they get their money, no harm, no foul.
If is a big word, isn't it?
If is always a word with gamblers.
Yeah.
And so then that starts him on his journey. And while he's deep in this journey, he meets a woman who he meets while he's on an up and he's feeling good. And she's a nurse and she's got a kid and she's solid and he likes her and he wants to be with her. But the gambling is getting in his way. So he's in a crossroads decision of his life.
It's a great story.
Thanks, man.
Where do you fit into this, Nikki Excitement?
Well,
come on, pour it out, baby.
I'm Jake's bag man,
friend,
barfly.
Yeah,
that's right. Know,
protector
in
a lot of ways.
So Nikki is, and in real life, Nikki and I grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would do movies, you know, movies are always really lonely and weird, especially when you're on location away from my wife and the family and the friends. And so Nick and I would text and I'd be like, any interest in coming to Atlanta?
Oh.
And he'd be like, yeah. And so here's a fun story that I haven't told yet, but it's true. So we were at Sundance for Digging for Fire.
Yeah.
And Nikki has always been a guy who's had a million nicknames because he's the man, the myth, the legend. So in Sundance, he was Sundance Nikki. And then because there was a lot of black ice that people were slipping on, he was Sundance Nikki, a.k.a. Black Ice, a.k.a. Nikki Excitement. So he was introduced as everything there. And this is a true story. My agent, Jay Gassner, was hanging out with us a lot. And after the trip, he goes, I'm sorry to be that, like, douchey.
What do you mean?
And he goes, I'm not, you know, I'm not as hip as the other industry. How do I know this guy?
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know. I grew up with him. He's one of my best friends. And he goes, ah. I could have sworn he was like some cool Canadian actor.
Oh, no.
And he goes, and I hadn't seen his cool movie. Now I feel like an idiot. And so I talked to Swanberg and I was like, yo, if big agents are thinking he's a thing from another country.
Right.
We had a part Play that we it. Were writing, and I'm like, there's only one guy. When you see the movie, there's only one guy who can do what Nicky can do. There's a really, like, physically important scene. So I'm like, we're casting black eyes.
Oh, I can't wait to see you, Nicky.
He kills it. It's honestly, and I don't say this as a friend, he's the breakout. Everybody who sees it
loves
will
you.
Go like, who's the guy with the hair and the muscles?
Like, ladies and gentlemen, introducing Nicky Excitement.
There is a Sean Penn feel
to you. Yeah,
you
do have a Sean Penn.
You know that, right?
That's what he said. Yeah. He was like, it's like a Sean Penn-ish thing.
Yeah. That's good. That's very,
every time
very
I
good.
Go out, I get it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's fantastic.
Jake, let's talk some other movies really quick. Sure. You did this Jurassic movie. I don't know what happened to that.
Yeah, just a little indie about dinosaurs.
Right, that did okay. You got a movie with Tom Cruise coming out called The Mummy.
How about this? Yeah. I can't wait to see The Mummy.
Yeah, I got to say, it was one of the wildest shoots I've ever been on. It was crazy.
Tom Cruise insists on doing his own stunts, which means you, his friend, also must do your own stunts.
Yeah, and when you sign up for it, you know, I had said I would do the movie, and then I read the script, and the whole first act is he and I, you know, it says Nick and Vale jump off a 3-story building as it explodes onto a 2-story building, and I thought, man, I can't do this. And so I talked to Tom, and I said, I don't know if I could do all these stunts, and he goes, oh, you're doing them. And he goes, because I want him in 2 shots and I don't want to do face replacement. And so that meant he and I trained together for 4 months and then jumped off buildings as they exploded. And there's no wires.
No.
And so every time I would fall, I would go, I think we've done something wrong. And he'd go, why? And he goes, because I'm hurt. And he would go, yeah, dummy, you jumped off a building. He's like, I'll prepare you so you don't get injured. But of course you're going to get hurt. And I realized the commitment this man has to movies is why he's Tom Cruise.
Right.
He loves it. If there's a wall, he will jump through it so the audience can experience that. And doing it with him, I was like, man, I love doing this with you. And on my next movie, if you're not there, I would like to introduce everyone to my stunt guy. His name is Jeremy. He's 5'10", about 185. And he will be jumping through a wall. And the audience will see me pop up with like makeup dust on me.
There's a clip of him from one of the Mission Impossible movies where he's up on a skyscraper. He's 80 stories up. And he walks to the edge of it. And he's looking down the edge trying to figure out how the rigging needs to go for a shot. And you just say, there's somebody else on the set that could do that for you.
On one of those Mission movies, he was on the side of an airplane that took off. And you can watch the clip if you Google, like, Tom Cruise side of an airplane. And I talked to the stunt coordinator, Wade Eastman. I talked to him, and I was like, what was the trick? There was no trick.
He did it.
He was wired in so he couldn't fall off. But he's on the outside of a plane taking a... You imagine that pressure on your face?
No.
You remember if like a bug hits you in the face?
Right.
If a bird hits your face, you're a dead man.
You did your own stunts in Smurf Village?
I did, and those were so hard. I'm Grumpy Smurf on it. I have to jump off a building with Tom Cruise.
That opens today, by the way.
Oh, Smurf it does?
Village. Yeah.
Hey, Win It All drops on Netflix. That's what the kids are saying today. Drops today, correct?
It's on, yeah, and it's worldwide.
And what are you doing a little Q&A tomorrow somewhere at the Music Box?
We are, but I've heard it's sold out, so very sorry.
Never mind. Watch it on Netflix.
And get Q&A love. At people's houses after the Netflix show?
Yeah, I'm going to get really drunk and just knock on people's door and go, I'm here for the Q&A. Wake up. Wake the kids up.
Do it.
Uncle Jake's doing a Q&A.
Is Nicky Excitement with you? Always, we got to let him
always,
in.
Always. That's Jake Johnson. That's Nicky Excitement. Again, the movie is Win It All, a Netflix original. See it. You'll love it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys
really
very
appreciate
much.
It. Stick around. Fun. News is next.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I'm sad to say that Don Rickles has passed away. Yesterday, he passed away at the age of 90. And this is in no way a tribute to him, but I am kind of obsessed with death.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
I really am. And didn't you always want to know if you got swallowed by a whale, what would happen to you?
Sure. Of course.
I actually have some breaking Rickles news right now.
What is
like
it, Ryan? Sure.
This is what we're getting from Pixar right now. No word on whether or not Rickles' lines will be cut for the new Toy Story 4 movie. It looks like the creative chief officer of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios obviously came out expressing condolences to the family, but they had that in the works, and we don't exactly know if there are going to be any changes made as a result of his
death.
So
he didn't record any lines? Is that what you're saying?
It does not appear. No. If he has, they have not completed it, and so the question is, are they going to go through with were the lines the way they were? Are they going to bring someone else in to play Mr. Potato Head? Or, you know, do they have enough to work with?
They had that same problem when Jim Varney died years ago in the Toy Story movies.
He
and
died?
They replaced him, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We all remember, yeah. Was it the Fast and Furious series?
Yeah, Paul Walker.
Paul Walker died, and they used his brother, correct, for
right.
a lot of the scenes.
Right.
Well, this ties into our next couple of guests, because in a book called And Then You're Dead, you got a sports editor and a doctor of physics hooking up to take a gruesome look at the actual science behind the most outlandish, cartoonish, and impossible deaths you can ever imagine. Cody Cassidy on the line and Paul Doherty. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, Bill and Wendy.
Totally obsessed with death. I want gruesome facts. I'm looking through the book. I haven't read it all yet. And please take this as a compliment when I say this is a great bathroom book, because you don't have to read it from cover to cover.
We take it as a compliment.
All right, good. You know, what happens if your head gets cut off? We have all heard, you know, when a chicken gets its head cut off, it runs around for a while. Tell us about this.
Yeah, there was actually... one chicken who ran around for a couple of years, his name was Mike the Headless Chicken, I think.
Perfect name.
When the when his owner cut his head off for to eat him, he actually left a little bit of the brainstem. And the chicken doesn't need much more than the brainstem to just walk around and eat food. And he went around for a few years in front of crowds, I think. And before he choked on something and died. But, yeah, it was sort of in a discussion about how important the brain really is.
So just to clarify, he survived having his head cut off. He made it through there, but he choked on something. That's what did him in.
Choked on a grain of corn.
Oh.
He couldn't do it. You know, his eyes, well, I guess his eyes weren't bigger than his stomach, but something like that.
How did he eat corn?
The owner actually would take an eyedropper and give him nutrients. And I guess there was a little bit of corn in the eyedropper that plugged up his gullet.
Oh my God! All right, why are you guys obsessed with death too? How'd you come together to write this book?
Obsessed with science and gruesome scenarios and interesting questions, and I think that was the idea, was that we could sort of talk about interesting science and the body and keep people entertained by discussing cool scenarios. Like when you sort of talk about Jupiter, your eyes might glaze, but if you talk about what would happen if you parachuted into Jupiter, it starts to get more interesting, I think. Yeah, you plunge down into Jupiter, and as you get deep enough into Jupiter, the pressure and the temperature turns the hydrogen atoms in your body, and there are lots of hydrogens in your body, into liquid metal hydrogen. So I sort of envision that you become like that the liquid metal man in the Terminator movie.
Oh, cool.
Wouldn't that be a great way to go?
Well, yeah. That's what we all see in movies. We see their version of what would happen on various planets. But is any of that realistic, really? I mean, what you just described is horrific. But so on almost any planet, if we were to survive there or try to survive without any kind of protection, we would probably just blow up or implode or something, wouldn't we?
You betcha. I mean, the Earth is like the only place for us. You try anywhere else in the solar system, and you're dead in 4 minutes for sure.
Yeah.
But like a Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger going out naked on the...
Yeah.
Face naked on the... They actually did a good job. What happens is not much happens. 15 seconds, all the air in your body gets expelled because the pressure on Mars is 1/100th the pressure on the Earth. So you lose all your air, got 15 seconds of consciousness. And that's perfect, because then you pass out, but at the body temperature and the pressure on Mars, your blood boils. So your blood turns into gas, and you swell up like this giant hot dog, which you saw his face doing. They actually did a pretty good job of covering that way of dying in the movie. And then they ruined it all by restoring the entire atmosphere of Mars in a
yeah.
few seconds.
Yep.
Well.
Yep.
We have Cody Cassidy on the line with us, worked as a sports editor for Zimbio.com, sports reporter for Stanford Athletics, a writer for Coach Magazine, and Paul Doherty, a co-director and senior staff scientist at San Francisco's famed Exploratorium Museum. The book is called What Really Happens If You Get Swallowed by a Whale, Are Shot from a Cannon, or Go Barreling Over Niagara, and Then You're Dead. I have a question for you, and Bill and I were just talking about this a few weeks ago. Everyone has heard this story. You know, we're here in Chicago. If you dropped a penny from the top of the John Hancock Building or the Sears Tower, in the book it's the Empire State Building, would it bore right through your head and kill you and destroy you?
No, a penny would actually be totally harmless. The terminal velocity of a penny would sort of flutter as it fell, and it would only fall at about 25 miles an hour. So it's sort of the same as somebody throwing a penny at you from across the room. Maybe startling, but certainly not deadly. But there are some other objects that that would be surprisingly lethal, like a pen. A nice steel pen would actually, if it had a shirt clip, it would act like the fletching on an arrow to kind of keep it pointed straight down. And at 190 miles an hour, a nice hard pen would put a chunk in cement. So you can imagine what it might do to your head.
And that's because it's pointed. And as you mentioned, if it had a shirt clip, it would be pointed down. So it's sharp like an arrow, kind of. A penny, just a flat little thing.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
What about a grape?
Yeah, so in fact, people have caught grapes from several hundred feet altitude. So like 80 stories up, guy on the ground caught a grape in his mouth, set the world record for catching grapes in your mouth, and had no bad effects. So
Wendy asked because she has a lot of enemies that she wants to destroy, and she wants to know if she should go to the top of the Hancock Building with grapes or pens. You say pens is her best bet.
Pens
is the way to go. What about this? We've discussed this on the show a couple of times. You talk in the book about what would happen if your elevator cable broke. Now, I always subscribe to the theory that if you're in an elevator that's falling, your best thing to do is jump up and down because you stand a 50-50 chance of being airborne when your elevator crashes. But is that true or not true?
You've watched too many cartoons.
I watch a lot of cartoons. That's true.
Yeah, unfortunately, you'd still be traveling. Even if you jumped, you would still be traveling at 190 miles an hour or so. So landing on cement would not be good at that speed, and whether you were on the elevator or not. But if you lie down flat on your back is the best way to go as your elevator is falling.
The best way to go, meaning a chance of survival or peaceful death?
you probably will go, too, but it's your best shot.
Why?
Well, it sort of spreads out the G-forces, which are the really dangerous things, and lessens the impact over your whole body. So it's still quite risky. I would cross your fingers as it was happening.
All right, so if the elevator's crowded, do you all lay down and then lay on top of each other? Would the person on the top have the best chance of survival?
Be the best, right?
Yeah, be on the top of the pile. Let those other people be your cushions.
All right. Good to know.
And could you throw grapes or pens at those people as your elevator is plummeting, or is it not necessary at that point?
Not necessary at that point. They're going to impact the bottom.
All right.
So if you're standing upright, the problem is your body stops, your bones stop to the floor, but your internal organs keep going. And so the heart rips loose and stomach rips loose, and it's just not good.
You always have a smile in your voice when you tell us these horrific details. I've noticed there's always
exciting, you know?
It is exciting.
Science is fun and cool.
Sure, absolutely. All right, we have more to discuss. What Really Happens If You Get Swallowed by a Whale or Shot from a Cannon or Go Barreling Over Niagara, and Then You're Dead is the book, and Then You're Dead. The authors Cody Cassidy and Paul Doherty, PhD, join us on the phone. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Always fun to find out some weird, fascinating science facts, and a couple of guys have put it together in a book that's available on Amazon and where your favorite books are sold. Cody Cassidy and Paul Doherty have written a book, And Then You're Dead, What Really Happens If... You know, we had Bello Knock on the show, the clown. He said he got shot out of a cannon. Mm-hmm. What would really happen if you became a human cannonball?
Well, the circus cannons are designed to keep you alive mostly, although I think I'll skip it because they're fairly dangerous. But an actual 155-millimeter howitzer, the acceleration is so great that you'd come out of that cannon as a mist of blood and bone, crushed bone, and you're just not going to survive that acceleration. Just impossible.
So stay away from cannons, Wendy. I tell you this all the time. You're taking your life in your own hands there.
All right, here's a question I have for you. Bill likes sweets. What happens if you ate as many cookies as Cookie Monster?
So it turns out that a doctor in the early 1900s did this experiment on a cadaver where he filled his stomach with as much fluid as he possibly could just to see what would happen. And it splits at like 4 liters. So converted into cookie metric, that's about 60 chocolate chip cookies. So
it's not that many. I'm telling you.
These are big chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, all right.
60 large chocolate chip cookies in a fairly short amount of time. Usually you'll throw them up, but if your body skips that step, you'll sort of split along that sort of the concave part of the stomach. The stomach sort of looks like a bean, and right on that concave weak point.
Oh.
Hey, in Chicago, you've got the bean.
Right, we do. Yes, we do.
And look at that concave portion. Think of that as a human stomach with mirrors on it. And that concave portion is where it's going to blow out if you eat too many cookies.
I have not read this chapter yet, but I'm intrigued by time travel. So what would happen if we had the ability to time travel? What exactly would go on there with our bodies? How would we change?
We sort of like what's really interesting is how the Earth has changed over time. And sort of we found like, I think the worst time to go would be probably like right around 1 billion years ago,
mm-hmm.
when there's, cause there's oxygen at that time and there's water to drink, but there are no plants and no animals except for a few small microorganisms in the ocean. So it would just be this really horrible, lonely experience walking around in a sort of desert landscape for, you know, about a month or something until you ran out of food and starved to death. And there's all sorts of other interesting times. Sort of, Earth was a fairly inhospitable place for almost the entirety of its existence until shortly before we showed up.
Yeah, you know, we said the Earth's like the only place you could live now, but if you go 1 billion years in the past or 1 billion years in the future, the Earth's not going to be so inhospitable either. Imagine this, wandering in the desert for a month, no radio to listen to. This is the ultimate.
Do you remember that show that was out a couple of years ago where they showed various cities and what they would look like if men ceased to exist? They'd show the city like in 10 years and 50 years and 100 years. It was pretty alarming.
Yeah, well, you know, in Cyprus, they drew a line down the middle of the island. And, you know, the Greeks got one half and the Turks got the other half. And there was this whole city that got evacuated. And so for decades now, they've been photographing that city as it returns to nature.
Yeah.
So they actually have an exact case study of how this happens.
Were there a bunch of these? I mean, the book is chock full of these facts, these what-if facts. But I bet there was tons you didn't even get to, wasn't there?
Oh, that's right. We did something called the Devil's Super Soaker, where we found the world's worst chemical, which happens to be chlorine trifluoride. And this chemical, if it spills on the ground, sets dirt on fire, and the fumes are poisonous. So, but we couldn't figure what to make the super soaker out of, because anything you made it out of
it
would
burn through.
Flame as soon as it
what do they use this chemical for?
It's an oxidizer. It's a strong oxidizer. If you want to, if you have something that nothing else will burn, this is the thing.
Oh.
Do you have something you want to burn?
No,
a couple of bodies.
I'm
or
good.
Something?
No, I'm good.
Were there any scenarios that were a little too much or too dark or weird to include in this book that you came across?
Yeah. Sometimes we sort of wanted you to be able to eat this book over lunch. So, so anything that happens like too commonly, or fire is one particular one that just gets so gruesome as you get into the specifics. Sort of fascinating science, but. You would not want to eat it on a full stomach or
read it.
Don't eat this book. don't eat the book.
Is it edible?
Eat it on a full stomach. we skip those.
Will there be a chapter 2? Because I'm sure you have more stuff that did not go in this book.
Well, we're just waiting on more questions.
And we're getting them. We went online and we're just beginning to get all our friends are now pouring on some new ideas, you know, like the chlorine trifluoride and a few of the other cool things we never heard of before.
I know this isn't fair to ask, but what's the stupidest question you've received, unless it came from either Wendy or I during this interview? Then leave it off. But what's the dumbest one you've got so far?
Well, yeah, the dumbest one so far was, if you're stuck in the middle of a spacecraft without any gravity, and you're there in the middle, and all the food and stuff is on the wall, could you get to the wall by farting? And how long would it take?
That's not a stupid question.
It comes up every day. Somebody asks that question.
The answer is, it's 100 times better to sneeze than to fart.
More force coming from a sneeze.
But guys, it's like
that's
that.
Right.
It's like the bubble room scene in Willy Wonka, where they needed to get down and they had to burp to get down. So it's kind of precedented.
That's it. Yeah, you just got to know your movies.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. What is the website, or where can people get a hold of you? Because maybe our listeners have some questions for book number two. What's the best place to get you?
The best way to get this is just look up online. Paul Doherty Exploratorium, and you'll get my webpage and be able to write in your fire away. I'm getting questions all the time now. People found out that address. And so Doherty, Paul Doherty, look for me online, and I'll take your questions.
Awesome. Good to know. The book, What Really Happens If You Get Swallowed by a Whale or Shot from a Cannon or Go Barreling Over Niagara. And then you're dead. Cody Cassidy, Paul Doherty, thanks so much, you guys. Pick it up on Amazon or wherever your favorite books are sold. And thank you so much.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Bill and Wendy.
Take care, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve next. It's Bill and Wendy.